Hello, Bleeding Green Nation, and welcome back to another edition of Eye on the Enemy, powered by SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation. I'm your host, John Stolness. You can follow me on Twitter, at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to break down Eagles-Cowboys week. These two teams play on Monday Night Football this week in Week 3 of your 2021 NFL season. Both teams at 1-1, a big matchup taking place in Big D. And joining me to talk about it in just a minute is one of my very favorite guests in the world, the great RJ Ochoa. We'll go through all of the matchups, the breakdown, stuff that we're going to be keeping an eye on for this game. So make sure you stick around for the next few minutes as we're going to have a great chat with RJ Ochoa about Eagles versus Cowboys coming up on Monday Night Football. Also, in the next few minutes, I'm going to be talking about, we're taking a look back, a little mini BGN memories of a game that happened 30 years ago with the Eagles in Dallas in Week 3. Back in 1991. We'll go over some memories from that game coming up here in just a few minutes as well. And joining me to help break down Eagles-Dallas week, this big game coming up on Monday night, is podcast pal RJ Ochoa, manager and editor-in-chief of Blogging the Boys. He's the host of the podcast The Ocho, and of course you hear him on the SB Nation NFL show, as well as the NFC East mixtape here on the BGN radio feed with Brandon Lee Galton every single week. I hope you haven't had your fill of RJ, because you're getting a little bit more of it here, and absolutely the Cowboys guy to talk to ahead of a big game like this. Follow him on Twitter at RJ Ochoa. RJ, what's going on, pal? Good to talk to you again.
John, it's great to be with you. I have to say, first and foremost, yes, I co-host the show with BLG every week on both the BGN and B2B podcast networks. I'm obviously a fan of Michael Kist in certain capacities, but my all-time favorite BGN radioer is John Stolness. Nobody will ever take the mantle.
That's crazy talk, but I appreciate the lies. But no, that's very kind of you to say, man. I appreciate it, and you're my favorite you're really probably my one of my favorite football podcast guests that I have on at all. You know what I mean? Like this, because I think we have a good back and forth here when we talk in Eagles Cowboys, because it can get kind of contentious between Eagles and Cowboys fans sometimes. RJ, I don't know if you're aware of that, but there's a little bit of a rivalry between the fan bases.
Yeah, you know. we kicked the hornet's nest that was Nick Sirianni's t-shirt this week on Twitter, and I had a couple of tweets. I was feeling good. My wife has discovered these Diet A&W root beers that taste just like the real thing, and so I was all hopped up and just kind of shot some tweets off, and for the last couple of days there have been Eagles fans just kind of popping up in my mentions every now and then, reminding me how long it's been since the Cowboys won a Super Bowl. My challenge, John, is Get some new material. I bet you have to dust off the VHS thing. Like, we've all made the joke, you know? I'm challenging the creative minds of Eagles fans is really what I'm trying to do.
Well, I think that that's fair. I mean, you could switch it over to the fact, you know, the DVDs weren't invented yet. You could refer to it. I mean, what happened more recently, the Monica Lewinsky scandal or a Dallas Cowboys NFC Championship game? I mean, that's it's up in the air there. So, you know, I think, you know, there's a whole bunch of different places that you can take it. You're right. I think it's a good challenge to Eagles fans, and I encourage everyone listening to take up that challenge and try and get a little bit more creative here as we're moving forward. I know RJ would appreciate it. So
exactly, you know, like the Monica Lewinsky thing is great. You know, like Maroon 5 didn't exist. You know, in the Cowboys, something like that. You know, let's put some context on it. Yes. You know, some meat on this bone. That's all. I mean, the drought is the drought. It's embarrassing, but you know, at least make me laugh. The VHS thing I've seen 1,000 times.
Right. Who wasn't born yet? We can roll down some names here. But anyway, you know, we got these two teams coming in here tied at 1-1 in the NFC East. Both have taken different paths in getting there. The Cowboys lost week one and won week two. Nice win by you guys over the Chargers last week, and Justin Herbert, fine young quarterback. The defense did a pretty good job against him in that game. The Eagles looked dominant against the Falcons in week one, and we're finding out, I think, just how bad Atlanta is. And then played the 49ers tough, but really blew that game, threw that game away. And lost one to the Niners in a game that I think really showed some of the inexperience and some of the warts with Nick Sirianni and Jalen Hurts, and some of the stuff that I expected to see from this team early in the season. You know, I wasn't expecting this team to be polished. A first-year head coach, a quarterback in his first full season, they're going to make mistakes. They're going to make bad play calls. They're going to make bad decisions. It's baked into the cake for me here in 2021. But I guess, you know, both of these teams missed the playoffs last year. Neither team finished with a with a winning record. But the approach for the Cowboys this season, this is obviously a win now season for Dallas, right? I mean, you've got Dak Prescott, you've got all these different guys on offense. Like, this is not a building year for Dallas. This is a win now year for Dallas. So how do you feel the first 2 weeks have gone for your Cowboys so far?
Well, you know, the first 2 weeks always seemed something like a period where the Cowboys had to get one win. It was obviously going to be difficult to beat Tampa, certainly on opening night. I think that's a challenging environment regardless of time and place. But the fact that it was the first game with fans, right? Like you had this very particular detail that had never existed before in NFL history with the return of an entire fan base to a stadium. And so, you know, the fact that the Cowboys didn't beat them, but obviously came really close. I think there were a lot of people that felt better after that game than honestly felt after the way they beat the Chargers, just because there were a lot of fireworks on that first Thursday night. But after that, you know, everything kind of fell apart for the Cowboys. The Friday after they lost to the Buccaneers, Michael Gallup was announced to have a calf strain, out 3 to 5 weeks. Lyle Collins was suspended for 5 games. The weekend passes, and, you know, everybody enjoys the Red Zone channel on Sunday. And then Monday hits, and Zach Martin, who didn't play that first game, activated off the COVID list. So everybody's feeling great, but Randy Gregory's placed on it. So you're all bummed. And then DeMarcus Lawrence breaks his foot. Donovan Wilson, Cowboys safety, had a groin issue and looked doubtful. Ty Nsekhe, Cowboys swing tackle, one of the options to replace Lyle Collins, had heat exhaustion last week and, you know, was ruled out of that game. So there were a lot of, you know, things that just kind of felt like, man, this season feels really doomed. And so for them to go beat the Chargers on the road, not exactly a hostile environment, as we all know, the Chargers don't exactly boast an incredible fan base at their particularly, you know, home stadium. But I thought it was impressive, you know, all of the players that the Cowboys were without. And I thought it was impressive that they found a different way to win. Granted, they didn't win in week one. But Kellen Moore has been so impressive. Obviously a candidate to be the Eagles head coach back in the offseason. But Kellen has thrown two different games at the Buccaneers and the Chargers, and that's really inspired a lot of obviously confidence and optimism. And Micah Parsons, what he did defensively for the Cowboys. So it's been not a rocky ride, but there's been a lot to kind of absorb in the time period that these two games have happened. Even now, you know, Carlos Watkins and Dorrance Armstrong were ruled out of this game on Monday night. Keanu Neal's on the COVID list. I mean, it just feels like the Cowboys are continually behind the eight ball, but it does feel like this is the part of their schedule that's starting to soften up, you know, all due respect to the Eagles, because after this, they get the Panthers, who have now lost Christian McCaffrey and J.C. Horn, at least for those two, for that game. Then the Giants. I mean, so this it was not necessary, but it would have been nice to have been 1-1 at this point to hopefully start a nice little run here.
Yeah, and you mentioned it. I wanted to get into the injuries a little bit here because, you know, both teams are dealing with some injuries now because on the Eagles side, we're finding out Jordan Mailata is most likely not going to play on Monday night, so Andre Dillard is going to have his hands full with Micah Parsons. Wouldn't be surprised to see him get some help, a lot of help over there on the left side of the offensive line, and, you know, you're going to be without, obviously, Brandon Graham is out for the season. Brandon Brooks is not going to play in this game, so the Eagles have some injury issues as well, but I feel like the Cowboys' laundry list of injuries are a little bit worse. And to me, I think, you know, most of them are on the defensive side, but the big offensive injury, not having Michael Gallup in there, Michael Gallup tends to do a number on the Eagles. He always seems to come up with a big game whenever these teams match up. DeMarcus Lawrence is your best defensive player, more than likely. That's probably the biggest guy you're missing here. But outside of him, Michael Gallup, number two. I mean, how hard are these injuries going to be for Dallas to overcome?
You know, DeMarcus Lawrence, certainly the biggest one, although there is a contingency of Cowboys fans who don't appreciate him. He doesn't have a lot of sacks, so that's, you know, low-hanging fruit that people kind of can't get past. And so, you know, people think, oh, yeah, well, you know, we overpaid him, so, you know, who cares? You know, he hasn't done anything. Great. Let's see what we're like without him. Now, the fact that the Cowboys did generate a pass rush against the Chargers has a lot of people feeling proud of themselves. But, you know, it was particularly tough last week for the Cowboys in that, you know, respect, given that they were down not just DeMarcus Lawrence, but Randy Gregory, because he was on the COVID list at the time. Randy Gregory obviously returning this game, which is a rising tide that lifts all boats, but the Cowboys down Dorrance Armstrong, who would have started, obviously, with DeMarcus Lawrence still out. So I think it's mitigated by the fact that, you know, Micah Parsons exists and is this, you know, defensive baller, but, you know, there's no Keanu Neal to alleviate Micah Parsons' absence at the linebacker position. So the Cowboys are kind of chasing their tail in a number of different ways, and you know, nobody really expected that they were going to have to rely on the likes of Jalen Smith this year, but that's been tested already. You know, here we are week three, and it was tested last week in week two. And Jalen played well. He's somebody who a lot of Cowboys fans have really soured on. Offensively, though, you know, I don't think there's a concern of a drop-off the way there is defensively. Not to take away from Michael Gallup, who isn't a contract year, by the way, but because of the fact that the Cowboys have Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb, and their two tight ends are both playing well in Dalton Schultz and Blake Jarwin, and that Tony Pollard has come along, and that Dak Prescott just always finds a way, I think people just have this more natural trust that that side of the ball will work itself out.
And there are more guys, you're like you said, I think, to kind of pick up from Michael Gallup's absence. Let's talk about the offensive side of things. You know, how has Dak Prescott looked to you through these first two games? Obviously had great numbers in the week one loss, then obviously led his team to a win last week. Does he look fully healthy? And if he doesn't look fully healthy, how's he compensating?
I think he definitely looks fully healthy. You know, Mark Schofield, who I know does a show for you guys here on BGN Radio, does a series for us called Dak Watch every week where he breaks down what Dak has done. And the first week was remarkable. You can watch those on the Block on the Boys YouTube channel. And I mean, Dak exceeded any expectation that I had for him in week one. And, you know, everybody was so concerned again about, well, they only ran the ball 12 times. And, you know, I don't think I certainly didn't think that Dak would throw the ball over 40 times, let alone almost 60. But so from a health perspective, he's fully right, fully good to go. You know, this past week against the Chargers wasn't his, you know, most incredible performance statistically, but the game script just didn't call for that. The Chargers could be had in the run. And that's where Kellen Moore kind of, you know, aligned himself and aligned the offense's game plan. And so Dak looks, I hate to sound hyperbolic, and I know that I'm guilty of, you know, ridiculously hyping up Dak, but he really does look, you know, like the best version of himself. You know, and I do hate when people cherry pick like the greatest moments of different players' careers, but I'm going to do that now. in 2014, a season that I hold near and dear to my heart, partly because of the way it ended for the Eagles, but you know, that was Tony Romo operating at the height of his powers from a mental perspective. He finally, it all clicked, and he understood everything, and the way he operated the line of scrimmage was just this really elite level that we had never really seen before from him. He obviously had physical tools, but it all came together that season, and Dak has reached that point already, and he does have the physical assets that Romo didn't in 2014, and so the overall combination, the overall package that Dak is in 2021 is really remarkable, and he really is the straw that stirs the drink, to use Stephen Jones's line. And I mean, again, I think he's willing to do what the team needs and what Kellen Moore asks of him. And I think, you know, if that's thrown in and aired it out and kind of going shot for shot with whatever the offense opposite of him might be, I think he's, you know, obviously able to do that and willing to do that. And I think he's one of the best people in the NFL at doing that.
So Dak, obviously, we know the offensive weapons that he has at his side. CeeDee Lamb threw two games this year. I don't know that he had a quiet rookie year last year, but he didn't explode in the way Justin Jefferson did last season. How has CeeDee Lamb looked these first two games? Because, I mean, he was a monster coming out of college, and obviously Eagles fans were wringing their hands that we weren't able to move up and grab him last year.
One of my favorite things about CeeDee Lamb is that he did not wind up in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I can imagine.
but, you know, he did not explode like Justin Jefferson, but, I mean, he didn't even play five full games with Dak Prescott. I mean, he almost broke the Cowboys' rookie receiving record, in, you know, with that being the case. He had 947 receiving yards. And so, I mean, with a full season, especially the kind of trajectory the Cowboys run, I think that would have, you know, kind of stabilized towards the mean a little bit in 2020, but I think he would have had an incredible year, you know, certainly from a fantasy angle. But I think the hype and the narrative around him would have been different this offseason. And CeeDee looked so just like a veteran. You know, obviously he's literally one, but he looked like a receiver who'd been around for a long time in the opener against Tampa, and the offense just kind of flowed in that direction. He did have, you know, everybody saw the Dak Prescott interception that was the tip ball. That was something that Mark did a great job of diagnosing in his series that he does for us, and that was on CeeDee. And CeeDee really had kind of his worst game as a pro against Tampa, had a lot of drops, really rebounded last week against the Chargers, but right now he's kind of the guy. We've all at Block on the Boys at least thought that this would be the season that he would cement himself as the alpha in the wide receiver room, and Michael Gallup's hurt right now. Amari Cooper is on track to play on Monday night, but is technically beat up with a rib injury, and so CeeDee is the guy. He has, you know, I'm sure you're aware of this, never played the Eagles with Dak Prescott as his quarterback, so I do anticipate him to kind of have this moment, because that's the way Cowboys-Eagles works, as you know, where every Eagles fan is like, oh my, this is why we were afraid of this, because it's CeeDee Lamb with an elite quarterback.
Yeah, and we haven't seen that yet. You're right, and it does make me nervous. I think, you know, with Darius Slay over there, it's most likely going to be that those guys are matched up from you know during the course of the game. But Darius Slay is good, but you know he can be beaten by a true number one wide receiver, no doubt about it. And that'll be an interesting matchup, I think, for these two teams too. I'm curious as to what's going on at running back. Also, it looked like the carry shares are starting to trend more in Tony Pollard's way. I mean, Zeke obviously is making all the money, and Zeke has had a lot of big games against the Eagles over the years. But you know, Pollard looks like he's the guy who's got more juice. Is Kellen Moore starting to see that as well? Are we looking at more of a timeshare now between these two guys in the backfield?
You know, this has been my favorite thing this whole week after the Chargers win, because and people like you, John, know that Zeke has been not his rookie self since his rookie self, right? I mean, he's been a fine running back. You know, it's a terrible position to commit an absurd amount of money to. And, you know, Kellen, I think, started to kind of gravitate. That's not the right way to put it, but started to incorporate Tony Pollard more late down the stretch last season. In fact, Zeke had to miss a game due to injury for the first time in his career last year when the Cowboys beat the San Francisco 49ers. Tony Pollard had a nice day in that game, and so that kind of got all the conversation started. But this is the first time this week that this has hit kind of the national level, where you know your morning talk shows and radio shows have discussed this topic, and that's really interesting. And I think we're just at that point in Zeke's career. I don't think objectively there is any way that any person can deny that from a where your goal is to have success in the run game, Tony Pollard is the better player. There's nobody can objectively deny that. Zeke is without question a better pass blocker. And I would argue the drop off from Zeke to Pollard in the pass game as a blocker is more significant than from Tony Pollard to Zeke in the run game. But, you know, the offense is far more efficient with Tony Pollard. There's, you know, it doesn't take any deep statistical analysis to really yield that. Although if you do one, it obviously shows those results. And so I think that, you know, Kellen said something this week when he was asked kind of what their disposition is. He said it's to aggressively attack what defenses give them. And I think that defenses are giving them opportunities for Tony Pollard to flourish. And I think Kellen is kind of a path of least resistance guy. And so he's going to take that low hanging fruit there. And so far it's bearing a lot of positive results. But yeah, I mean, I don't think that the Cowboys are in any way, shape, or form going to return to Zeke being the 2016 guy that a lot of people still think he is.
All right, so give me one key matchup to watch when the Cowboys offense is on the field here, RJ.
Man, I think CD and Darius Slay is good just because it could swing the game, but that is a little bit of kind of low-hanging fruit, so I won't go that direction. You know, I know you're scared of CD. I'm always scared of Fletcher Cox. I mean, he's somebody who's made this difficult, and, you know, Tyler Biadasz, I find this interesting too, John. There's so many, like, cosmic connections in this game. Tyler Biadasz was a Cowboys fourth-round pick last year who they traded up with the Eagles to draft, actually, and Devontae Smith is only an Eagle because the Cowboys traded out of the 10 slot with them and ultimately landed at 12, the Eagles' original pick that they gave up a third-round pick for the Cowboys to take Micah Parsons. So you have all these weird kind of would-be things that wouldn't have happened if not for both franchises. Yeah. But back to Biadasz, he has been the least impressive center or offensive lineman, excuse me, for the Cowboys this season. He's a second-year player. I mean, he started 5 games so far in his career, so I know that qualifier is hovering around with, like, Landon Dickerson right now as an example. But, you know, when the Cowboys drafted him, he came from Wisconsin, just like Travis Frederick, in the year Frederick retired. So a lot of people were really quick to kind of just, you know, slot him in. We're just continuing along the lineage of Travis Frederick, and he just hasn't been that guy. And so I think Fletcher Cox can have his way with Tyler Biadasz, which would make for a long Monday night.
Well, yeah, I think that's and Javon Hargrave has also really outplayed Fletcher Cox early here, all throughout the summer and in these first couple of games. Javon Hargrave has probably been the best player on the Eagles for offense or defense. So middle of the defensive line against the middle of the Cowboys offensive line, certainly some key matchups to watch there. Let's flip the script and let's talk about the Cowboys defense right now. And we talked about all the injuries that they're undergoing. We've talked about Micah Parsons a bit, you know, obviously drafted as a linebacker. They've had to move him to edge rusher here. And by all accounts looked like he had no problem making the transition last week. I think did he have like 7 quarterback pressures last week at defensive end? Am I remembering that number right?
You are. He was tied with Chase Young, to put it in proper perspective.
Oof.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, he has been what this is a weird way to put it, but what we thought CeeDee Lamb would be last year, because we thought, you know, obviously with Dak Prescott at quarterback, CeeDee will come in and just, again, you know, superstar right away. And mm-hmm. the season broke for the Cowboys, so we never really saw that. But Micah has looked just like that. He's, without question, the best defensive player on the team. I think that might even be true when DeMarcus Lawrence is healthy. He's just come in and kind of changed the MO of the group. Mm-hmm. And Dan Quinn has gone a long way in that regard, too. I'm disappointed, John, you didn't mention that the Cowboys defense leads the NFL in takeaways this season. I mean,
no, I just hadn't gotten to it yet, RJ. I was itching to give you that to give you that bouquet, man.
I mean, it's been weird. And some of those takeaways have been a little fluky. Leonard Fournette tipped a pass in the opener. You know, Tom Brady threw a Hail Mary attempt in the opener at the end of the first half, things like that. But, you know, they do count. And so it's been strange. It's been strange to see the Cowboys kind of take advantage of opportunities. Last season, through the first four games, the Cowboys offense started a possession on the positive side of the 50-yard line once throughout the entire first four games of the season. They've already done it, I think, three times so far through half of that amount. So things are positive in that direction. And Dan Quinn has really, you know, again, the bar was low, but really made an impact early on.
And conversely, the Eagles have had no turnovers here through the first couple games of the season. But as we all know, turnovers can sometimes come in bunches and, like you said, a little fluky every once in a while. So, but they move Micah Parsons to defensive end. What kind of a hole does that leave in the linebacking core? Because linebackers have always killed the Eagles with the Cowboys. And the Cowboys, generally speaking, have always had a good collection of linebackers. But with Parsons moving to defensive end, how are the Cowboys making up for it at the linebacker spot?
Well, you know, Leighton Van Der Esch obviously had an incredible rookie year against the Eagles specifically. I believe his first career interception actually came against the Eagles in that game in Philly. But, you know, so obviously the Cowboys relying on him, but I don't think any Cowboys fan is panicked by that. Leighton's always been a good player when he's been healthy, but now Micah's there. They declined his fifth-year option, so, you know, that just kind of is what it is. But what it has done, you know, moving Micah, that is has forced the Cowboys defense to rely on Jalen Smith, and that is a terrifying proposition. And I know that nationally, I think, and this might not be Eagles fans, but, you know, I don't know, maybe Vikings fans or people that just kind of casually tune in to you know, the Cowboys or the NFC East, they see Jalen, you know, he's in the Madden commercials and things like that, and so they think he's really good. He might be the worst player on the team, you know, generally speaking. but the Cowboys paid him, and, you know, that is what it is. But kind of like Zeke, that's what's been impressive about the team overall this year, is they haven't played their big time contracts the way a lot of teams tend to do. They've really kind of made it a true meritocracy, which is cool and sounds cool. But Jalen, to his credit, you know, when he was relied upon more last week against the Chargers, played well. And I would bet that that's not sustainable. I think if the Cowboys can be had in any direction, it is attacking Jalen Smith defensively. I mean, he's always done well in certain fans' minds by racking up tackles. And that's kind of, I think every fan base has a player that they stand for no reason. And Jalen is that dude. And people love to talk about how he led the NFL in tackles last year, despite the fact that he blew just about every coverage that he was assigned to.
So if the linebacking core has been weakened a little bit with the loss of Micah Parsons, the secondary still has some issues there as well. And, you know, I'm still not sure what the Eagles have in their trio of receivers. I think Devontae Smith was very quiet last week, but he got open a few times and Jalen Hurts just missed him. So I think you could have seen a big game from Smith last week if Hurts had been able to get him the ball and just wasn't able to make it work. And we saw Jalen Frager score a touchdown, but stepped out of bounds as he ran his route. He's the most infuriating player on this team since Nelson Aguilar, so really since last year. And, you know, and I think, you know, with Quez Watkins, has had some splash plays. I'd like to see him get a little bit more run out on the field. How do you see the matchup between the Eagles wide receivers and the Dallas cornerbacks and secondary? Because, you know, I don't really feel like I can adequately take a look at that matchup and know which way it's going to go, because I don't know what we have in the Eagles receiving core.
So I'll say this, that the Cowboys have one DB in general that I, you know, don't lose sleep over, and it's Trayvon Diggs, who's obviously in his second season. He's had an interception in each of the first two games this year, and he has never not had an interception in a game against the Philadelphia Eagles. Picked off Carson Wentz twice and Jalen Hurts once. And so, in fact, all of his interceptions his rookie year came against the Eagles. But
by the way, Carson Wentz is not an Eagle anymore.
I think he should forever be cemented in franchise history, is my opinion. But but so, you know, if the battle is my idea would be Trayvon shadow Devontae Smith. Devontae terrifies me. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And so he might be, at least in my assessment, the most talented player, maybe on the Eagles in general, but certainly on the Eagles offense. Mm-hmm. You know, and I am interested to see how Jalen Hurts continues to progress. But, you know, I think that the Cowboys would do best to kind of neutralize him in that sense. But the Cowboys' other starting cornerback is Anthony Brown, who they got in the sixth round in 2016, the same draft that yielded Dak and Zeke and unfortunately Jalen Smith. And he's been a fine journeyman, but, you know, he has been destroyed early on this season by several different Buccaneers, several different Chargers. And so that's where the Cowboys also can be had. I think, you know, and I think that maybe, you know, this could be a Jalen Reagor game just because he draws Anthony Brown. Anthony has not been good in any capacity. Dan Quinn tried to cape for him after week one, saying his safety help blew it and he was kind of left on an island. But that's just Anthony Brown. He can definitely absolutely be had. And so you're right. I think Quez Watkins is talented enough that where, you know, the Cowboys can only devote Trayvon Diggs one place. And if it's Quez Watkins against Anthony Brown, I don't like Anthony's odds in that particular matchup.
You know, it's kind of funny. I think this is a game where the Eagles are going to probably throw the ball. They should have thrown the ball more last week against a 49ers secondary that was a little bit suspect. I'll also be interested to see how Nick Sirianni bounces back from a really bad play calling week against San Francisco. And one of the things that we've seen so far with the Eagles is, and this is maybe specifically just because Jalen Hurts is a young quarterback, but nothing in the middle of the field right now for the Eagles offense. I mean, everything is outside the numbers, and they're either chucking it long or they're keeping it within like 6 or 7 yards. This feels to me like a Dallas Goedert game, you know, where Dallas Goedert's got to kind of take control, and he's had big games against Dallas in the past, and we don't know if Zach Ertz is going to play. He's on the COVID-19 list, but as somebody who's been vaccinated, if he has a couple of negative tests 24 hours apart, he can play on Monday night, so they might have Zach Ertz there as well. But this feels like a game where the Eagles should really maybe not be in 12 personnel, but be looking for those tight ends in the middle of the field, because that's an area of the defense that they just haven't exploited yet. And I don't know if that's because of game script, because of what defenses have been giving them, or because Jalen Hurts isn't comfortable throwing there. But Dallas Goedert, the tight ends against the linebackers and safeties, is a matchup I would definitely exploit if I'm Nick Sirianni. Give me a matchup to watch when Dallas is on defense for you.
Well, I would say Quez Watkins against Anthony Brown. To kind of piggyback, I would add, you know, Dallas. I think Dallas Scott will be open for 7-8 yards a clip, just because that's the Jalen Smith way. But Jalen will tackle him every time, and every Cowboys fan will tell us that that he's great. But I think, you know, beyond that, I mean, I know that people are, you know, I think there is this national perception that the Cowboys offensive line is still elite. And I think that still exists a little bit about the Philadelphia Eagles offensive line, and not to take any shots at it, but obviously not what it was in its heyday. But I think there are a lot of Eagles fans probably panicked about this. It should be mentioned, the Cowboys, again, are down DeMarcus Lawrence. They're down Dorrance Armstrong, his backup. They're down Carlos Watkins, one of their defensive tackles. Randy Gregory's coming back from his first game off the COVID list. They're playing their first round linebacker at edge rusher for the second time in his third NFL game. I mean, so that can be had. I mean, you know, I know that Jalen Hurts, you know, in week one at least, I think had the lowest average depth of target of all quarterbacks. I mean, you know, I don't know that. I think he's going to have time in the pocket at different times, and so I think it will be critical for the Cowboys to generate a lot of pressures, for Micah to have that superhuman game again, because otherwise, I mean, Anthony Brown will leave somebody open. Jalen Smith is too slow to even run step for step with Dallas Goedert, and so if the Eagles offensive line can buy that extra, you know, quarter of a second, half second, I do think it makes a big difference, generally speaking, but in this matchup specifically, because the Cowboys are so down. And so, I mean, I hate to be cliche and say the trenches, but I mean, it really can come down to that this week, given the state the Cowboys are currently in.
Yeah, I am more confident with Landon Dickerson taking over for Brandon Brooks than I am Andre Dillard over there at left tackle. That's what gives me nightmares. And thankfully, Jalen Hurts is a mobile quarterback, and he likes to roll to his right. So you might see a lot of designed rollouts to try and get some pressure away from Andre Dillard. But This is that's a scary matchup for me if I'm an Eagles fan. Is you know, how's Andre Dillard going to deal with the left side of the Dallas defensive line? So, all right, prediction time here, RJ. Monday Night Football, Eagles in Dallas taking on the Cowboys. Two teams that still we're not really sure exactly what we have in these two squads. I do think Dallas is the better team right now. Before the season, as you know, I think we had a quick Twitter conversation about this. I did pick Dallas to go back to its first NFC Championship game for the first time since NASA was actually still sending spacecraft into outer space. So, I feel like this is a season where Dallas is just kind of due. Dak Prescott's kind of due. It's been a really long time since Dallas has gone on a little run here in the postseason. So that was my preseason prediction. However, I'm feeling pretty good about the Eagles' chances here on Monday night. And you know, full disclosure, I picked the Eagles to lose the first 2 weeks of the season. So Johnny Homer, I'm usually not. But how do you see this thing shaking out?
You know, I appreciate the transparency and the creative humor. I've picked the Cowboys to win 33-17, but I do think that will kind of be stretched out. I think there might be a kind of fourth quarter final touchdown, you know, with just a little bit of change outside of the 2 minute warning to go that kind of puts it, you know, to the point that the box score doesn't reflect a really contentious game. And I think I think it could be a game that doesn't get out of hand, but gets kind of solidified. You know, say the Cowboys win the toss, they defer, and they get the opening possession to start the second half. I could see them going down and scoring. Maybe they, you know, that position starts with them up 7, up 10, and they just go really kind of announce, okay, this is going to be a long half for the Eagles. And then, you know, they have been a little bit fortuitous in the turnover department this year, so it's hard to bank or count or predict luck, but that's kind of been on their side. And so at the end of the day, the Cowboys defense is suspect, obviously, and I know that there are a lot of suspect things on the Eagles, but at the end of the day, the best player on the team or on the field for either team is Dak Prescott, and so I'm inclined to trust that. So I've got the Cowboys winning, and I do want to say, I mentioned this to BLG, he poo-pooed it, but I wanted on the record that I think that Nick Sirianni is trying to start a trend, John. I think he's trying to get this highlighter on the visor thing. That is bad vibes to me to use a BLG term because it is too uncomfortable to believe that is, like, you know, from a perception or perspective of practicality. I really believe it is his version of Matt Patricia's number two pencil. And like, Nick Sirianni wants people in Philadelphia dressing up as him for Halloween, putting the highlighter in the visor. That's a bad sign, in my humble opinion.
No, I don't disagree with that, you know, and you know what, we don't need highlighters in this day and age. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What do you need the highlighter for, first of all? So yeah, and the pandering from Nick Sirianni. Listen, I give the guy full marks for trying to, because, you know, here in Philadelphia, we want everybody to be #one of us. You know, I do appreciate it. We're pushing it a little far. I think just you know, you just do you, Nick Sirianni. You don't have to do us. Just do you. I mean, I did beat Dallas. I mean, if he was really going to do it, he would have a Dallas Sucks T-shirt on instead of beat Dallas. That's where the true Eagles go when they're breaking out the and frankly, you know, if you're into the R-rated T-shirts, there are some other alternatives as well. But this is a family podcast, so we're not going to go there.
Right. I will say, John, as somebody who has bought the, you know, when you go to a game, they have the like matchup T-shirt, you know, I'm talking about.
I do.
I've bought those and then had the Cowboys go on to lose, you know, so
yeah.
I've learned that lesson. And all I'll say is this was a bold move from Nick Sirianni, but
it is.
Know, should this go at least the way I've predicted, that's a bad meme waiting to happen. You know, like, no, you can't, if you're an Eagles fan, you can't wear a beat Dallas shirt if the Eagles lose this particular game. You know, he's ruined that shirt.
Yeah. I can't. We have a meeting of the minds on this one. I can't disagree. These are the important issues that need to be discussed here on Eye on the Enemy on Eagles Dallas week, and it's going to be discussed on blogging the boys. So make sure you check out everything going on over there. Check out all the podcasting stuff that RJ is doing. A prolific podcaster for the podcast The Ocho and the SB Nation NFL Show, the NFC East Mixtape, and all the other podcasts that he appears on as a guest. With his never-ending podcast appearances. Follow him on Twitter @RJ Ochoa. RJ, thanks for coming back on Eye on the Enemy, man. I appreciate it.
Of course, John. You're the best. Go Phillies.
Well, up next, before I give you my prediction on the game coming up on Monday night, let's hop in the Wayback Machine and do a quick BGN Memories of a game that took place 30 years ago when the Eagles went into Dallas in Week 3. We'll do that coming up next here on Eye on the Enemy. And we're back on Eye on the Enemy, and that music you hear is the theme to BGN Memories. And no, this is not a BGN Memories podcast. I would have liked to have gotten one of those out this week, but just didn't have the time to make it happen. So we're going to bring a little BGN Memories here to Eye on the Enemy as we take a look back at the year 1991 when the Philadelphia Eagles went into Dallas for a Week 3 matchup. Just like this, the Eagles going into Dallas in Week 3, and they were 1-1 that year too. And I believe Dallas was also 1-1 heading into that game. This was a game that has lived in Eagles lore for three decades now, one of the great games from the Rich Kotite era. I wonder how many people think of this game and they think it's from the Buddy Ryan era, but it's actually from the first season of the Rich Kotite Bud Carson Philadelphia Eagles. Of course, this is when the Eagles went into Dallas against second-year quarterback Troy Aikman and destroyed that team 24-0 behind a dominant performance from the D that year. And in this game, this is the game where they sacked Troy Aikman 11 times. And we're going to go through all of the great little nuggets and notes from this game over the next couple of minutes. Jim McMahon got the start in this one for the injured Randall Cunningham. And they got on the board quickly. Got up to a 17-0 lead in the second quarter. McMahon found Fred Barnett for a touchdown for the first score of the game to put him up 7-0. Fred Barnett had a big game here. Really the only offensive player on either team to have a big afternoon, but he caught 7 balls for 111 yards and a touchdown. McMahon, when they were up 10-0, hit Barnett for another big play, a 45-yard pass play down to the Dallas 1-yard line that put the Eagles up 17-0 in the second quarter, and Philly was on its way. Troy Aikman had maybe the worst game of his career. He was good in his second season, but this was the worst game of his career, even worse than anything we saw from his rookie season. And he played his whole rookie season and was brutal in his rookie season. He threw 3 interceptions on the afternoon. Seth Joyner had one of them. Rich Miano intercepted Troy Aikman twice. And you got to imagine that when Rich Miano goes to barbecues, when he goes to parties, when he watches football games with his family at home and he hears Troy Aikman on the call, he can say to his family and friends, you know, I picked off Troy Aikman twice in that 11-sack game back in 1991. That's not a bad thing to be able to do if you're Rich Miano and you're just living your life now, 3 decades later, able to say that you intercepted a Hall of Fame quarterback twice in one of the greatest Eagles games of all time. I think that's a pretty cool thing. In the first half, Troy Aikman 4-for-10 with 3 interceptions in the first half, and things would not get any better for him. He was sacked, like I mentioned, 11 times in the game. Now, Clyde Simmons was the guy who racked up most of these sacks, recorded a then Eagles record 4.5 sacks in this game. Jerome Brown added another 2.5 sacks, with Mike Golic getting 2 sacks, Mike Pitts getting 1 sack, and Reggie White, with the team getting 11 sacks, pretty shocking that Reggie White only got 1 of those sacks, but Reggie White impacted a lot of those sacks that Clyde Simmons got and Jerome Brown got by providing a lot of pressure off the edge and forcing Aikman into really no man's land, having to step up in the pocket where his defensive tackles were waiting for him, or having him move to his left because Reggie White was in his face and Clyde Simmons just waiting there with open arms to gobble him up and throw him down to the ground. So the Eagles, 11 sacks, a team record 11 sacks in this one. Clyde Simmons with an Eagles record 4.5 sacks, Jerome Brown 2.5, Golic with 2, Mike Pitts with 1, and Reggie White with 1. The Eagles' dominance of the Cowboys in this game was overwhelming. The Cowboys had 90 yards of total offense. Almost 24 minutes went by in this game before Dallas was able to manage a first down, and the Cowboys could not cross midfield on their own until the final 2 minutes and 43 seconds of the game, when they were mounting one last furious rally to get into the end zone. Their 90 yards of total offense was a franchise worst. The previous low was 100 yards set the year before when they went 1-15 against Phoenix, the then Phoenix Cardinals. The Cowboys entered the game as the NFC's leading offensive team through the first 2 weeks of the season, but that was not the case in this one. They gained only 39 yards in the game until that final desperation drive to the Philadelphia 9 with 36 seconds left, and they, of course, were not able to punch it in. They had 39 yards of offense until that final drive in the fourth quarter. This was at a time in this rivalry when the Eagles beat the Dallas Cowboys relentlessly. The script had flipped. There was a solid decade and a half where Dallas won every single game against the Eagles. But once Buddy Ryan came on board, things changed dramatically, and the Cowboys were going through a rebuild during this time as well. This was their eighth straight win for the Eagles over the Cowboys. These were the salad days, guys. Troy Aikman finished 11 of 25 on the day for 112 yards, 3 interceptions, 11 sacks, and a 17.8 quarterback rating. Emmitt Smith had just 13 carries for 44 yards in this one. Jim McMahon, meanwhile, had a solid game at quarterback, 18 of 29 for 207, 2 touchdowns, and a 106.5 rating. So lots of good feelings after this one. Even without Randall Cunningham at quarterback, you just felt the defense was so good that this Eagles team could still go on a run if Jim McMahon could stay healthy. Of course, as we know, Jim McMahon was not able to stay healthy during the course of the season, and guys like Brad Gable and Jeff Kemp and Ken O'Brien, the rotting corpse of Ken O'Brien, made starts for the Eagles at quarterback. They could not find signal callers to help them win games, and the offense was just absolutely brutal. And of course, the Cowboys did get revenge for this loss in week 16, as the two teams, who were both at 9-5, battled at Veterans Stadium, with the winner guaranteed a spot in the postseason, the loser guaranteed a spot out of the playoffs. It was essentially a playoff game. And Dallas ended up winning 25-13. I think the Eagles led in this one 13-11 at one point before Dallas scored 17 points in the fourth quarter. Or was it? No, it wouldn't have been. It would be 13-8. Or maybe it was like the Eagles led 10-8, I think it was, at some point. Whatever it was, the Eagles had a very slim lead at the beginning of the fourth quarter, and Dallas pulled away. There was a big punt return for a touchdown by Kelvin Martin that really turned the tide in that game as Dallas scored 17 points in the fourth quarter to ice. Said Jeff Kemp got the start for the Eagles in this game, which explains why they ended up losing this one 25-13. The Eagles would miss the playoffs. Dallas would get in and then would win a wild card game before losing to the Detroit Lions in the divisional round. But the dynasty was born at this point. And really, the Eagles' time of dominating the Dallas Cowboys, the last time they were able to say they were able to do that was in that Week 3 game back in 1991 when they sacked Troy Aikman 11 times. But that is one of the great games in Eagles history that we like to remember fondly. So, looking ahead to Monday night, Eagles against the Cowboys, I feel more confident, like I was talking about with RJ, I feel more confident going into this game than I did the home opener against the San Francisco 49ers. To me, Jalen Hurts seems like a guy who is great 1 week and not so great the next week. And I feel like this is a guy who's going to bounce back this week. RJ mentioned a minute ago that the best player on the field is Dak Prescott, and that's one of the reasons why he's going with the Cowboys this week. When Jalen Hurts is on, I feel like he can be every bit as good as Dak Prescott. And I feel like Nick Sirianni is going to... He seems like he's a pretty self-aware guy. He was beating himself up pretty good this week about some of his play calls, and you don't want him to do that too much, but you just want to see him learn from mistakes and apply things differently. And I think he'll come up with a better game plan against Dallas. I think Dallas's defense is still extremely suspect. The big matchup I worry about, again, is Andre Dillard on the left side against Micah Parsons or whoever else it is they have over there. But the Dallas defense is banged up, and they really aren't a whole lot better than they were last year. I think the Eagles can move the ball. I think they've got to find a way to get Dallas Goedert involved in this game. They've got to find a way to get DeVonta Smith involved in this game, and I think they will do that. The running backs should be able to make some hay once the passing game has softened things up a little bit. And I think the defense will be able to hang in there. Jonathan Gannon has shown me something these first couple of weeks. I'd love to see the Eagles get some turnovers and some sacks. That is something we have not seen from this team in a few years with Jim Schwartz's crew and now this defense, which I don't think is as talented as previous defenses, especially with Brandon Graham out now, Josh Sweat, Derek Barnett, and The guy Kerrigan is gonna. They're all gonna have to step up and fill in the void, especially Josh Sweat. He's gonna have to play more. They're gonna have to get him on the field more. Ryan Kerrigan can't play more than Josh Sweat in this game. It just can't happen that way. And Derek Barnett has to play like a first round pick. No more stupid penalties. Get to the quarterback. Make some things happen. Help out your defensive tackles, Fletcher Cox, Javon Hargrave, who are actually doing some real work this year. Hassan Ridgeway playing pretty well too here in the early going. So. I do think this is a game the Eagles will win. I think they'll do enough on offense to. I think they'll put up some points on the board. I think the defense will be able to, like they have been doing, bend but don't break. Again, hopefully they get a couple of turnovers, maybe get picked Dak off once or twice. But I see the Eagles going into Dallas and taking care of business in this one, 28-24. I think this is going to be a solid game for Jalen Hurts. And I think in this game, Jalen Hurts is going to be the best player on the field, not necessarily Dak Prescott. And I feel like the Eagles will move to 2-1 on the season as they look to have a better season than I was anticipating before things got underway. All right, folks, that's going to do it for this edition of Eye on the Enemy. Thanks again to RJ Ochoa for coming on the podcast. And don't forget to check out everything we're doing at bleedinggreennation.com each and every day as we take you up to kickoff on Monday Night Football. All the latest news and analysis and injury reports are all right there. And we got a slew of podcasts for you to listen to. We've got this game covered from every angle. Make sure to check out the Bleeding Green Nation YouTube page after the game for our live post-game analysis, and we'll be giving you the analysis all week long and previewing next week on the BGN Radio podcast feed. So tell your friends about it, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcasts. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time here on Eye on the Enemy.
BGN.